Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to Refuah Shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Avraham, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel, Pesach Seb Ben Chava, Harab Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have two subjects we want to discuss on this week's program. First, we want to discuss a vivid description of the horrific starvation that took place in the German Nazi death camps, because we must always remember what happened during the Holocaust. We must never forgive and never forget. It was the worst crime in human history, absolutely unforgivable, and we must never forget the details of the horrors that took place during the Holocaust. The second thing we want to discuss is the folly of the Netanyahu government's response to renewed Muslim Nazi terrorism from Gaza. The Hamas Muslim Nazi terrorists are firing dozens and dozens of missiles and rockets into Israeli cities and Israeli communities. And the Netanyahu government's response is so pathetic. And most of the Jews in Israel are not even being exposed to the truth. And this is why it's so essential that we support Moshe Feiglin and the Zehut Party, and that we get armed and that JTF get its message out. That's going to be the second subject. But first, let's start off with a description of what happened during the Holocaust. And this is something that we did in Hebrew. We did a Hebrew video on this where a rabbi describes what happened in a conversation that he had when he was a teenager with a Jewish Holocaust survivor. First of all, this rabbi, he was a teenager in the yeshiva, and the yeshivas are the Jewish parochial schools, the Jewish schools where Jews learn Torah. And he and his and several of his friends got together and decided they were going to go on a hike. And they were going to visit various places, and then they were going to pray in various synagogues. And the father of one of the students, who was a Holocaust survivor, the father of one of the students who was in his 50s and he was a Holocaust survivor, decided to go along with his son and with his son's friends to join them. And here is what happened afterwards. The father, when he would see a wrapper from ice cream or from a chocolate bar or from candy or anything on the floor, he would immediately pick it up and look to see if there was any chocolate left in the wrapper or any ice cream left. If there was any ice cream left, he wanted to eat the ice cream. If it was on the floor, we're talking about on the floor, he would search and look around to see if there was any food on the floor, even though he had a job and he was able to buy food. And this was something that was regarded, of course, as very strange by these teenage boys in the yeshiva who were accompanying him on the trip there. And they were just stunned to see this type of behavior. He didn't actually eat anything from the floor, but he would pick it up and look and search almost instinctively for the food. And then they went to a synagogue, and in the synagogue, after the prayers, they threw candy for the kids in the synagogue. They do this in some of the Sephardic or non-European synagogues. They threw candy on the floor for the kids, and he went running and grabbing all the candy from the floor, wanting to grab as much candy as he could get from the floor. And so the kids thought that there was something wrong with him, and he could see that they thought he was crazy. And so finally he decided to say to this kid, who was again his son's friend, "I know you think I'm crazy. I know you think I'm completely nuts, but I want you to know what the Germans did to me in the Nazi concentration camps." He was 16 years old when he went to the Nazi concentration camp. His entire family was murdered. All of his family, his parents, brothers and sisters, everybody. He was the only person left out of dozens of members of his family. He was the only one to have survived. And again, he was a 16-year-old kid. And he said, "When we were in the concentration camps, we never saw the sky, we never saw the ground, we never saw anything in front of us. The only thing we saw all day and thought about all day was food. We were starving. We were desperately starving. The Germans sadistically and maliciously fed us very little food, and we had a very vigorous work schedule with very little food. And so the only thing we could think of was food, was our starvation, was how we were starving and how we were just dying to eat anything we could get our hands on. And so most of the people, of course, never survived this ordeal. The vast majority of people in those concentration camps died in the camps. They never survived. Many of them died of starvation. Many of them died of other types of torture and horrific conditions that the German sadists and the Ukrainians and Poles and other Slavic mass murderers that were concentration camp guards put them through. But anyway, he mentioned how the only thing he could think of was food. And of course, we have a famous situation at the end of the war when American soldiers liberate the camps. And when American soldiers liberate the death camps, all of the emaciated, they were stunned to see what went on there. They saw all the dead bodies, they saw all the horror. And they saw that the survivors were completely emaciated, were so thin and so and just they'd never seen a sight like this in their life. They were amazed that anybody was still alive. And the Jewish survivors said to the American soldiers that they wanted food. They told them in Yiddish that they wanted food, Essen, they wanted to eat. And so the soldiers gave them some of the army provision, you know, some of the food that the soldiers would be fed in the army, some of the provision. They gave them some to eat. And the survivors that started eating it, they frantically started eating it. The minute they got it, they frantically started eating it. And they died because their body couldn't take eating regular food like that so quickly all at once after having starved for months. The body could not adjust to it. And so the ones who were given food by the soldiers, by the American soldiers, all died because of that. Because when someone's in a situation like that, you've got to feed them gradually. Their body cannot take normal eating, and especially when they eat quickly and frantically because they're desperately starving. This 16-year-old kid, his camp, the death camps were liberated, the war is over, the 16-year-old kid then is in a situation where the Germans, right before the end of the war, right before it was over, the Germans fled for their lives, the German Nazi soldiers and the other concentration camp guards, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, may their names and memories be obliterated. And they didn't even want to go in and wipe out the Jews that were still in the barracks, the Jews who were still alive, because they were afraid they were going to get diseases. They were afraid to go into the barracks because there was so much disease. Their immune systems were broken down. These people, they hadn't eaten. They were tortured and tormented all this time, working in terrible weather. By the way, it is brutally cold in Poland, in Auschwitz and the other concentration camps in Poland. Brutal cold, brutally cold weather. And even when it was winter and brutal cold, this concentration camp survivor told this kid, who thought he was crazy because he was picking up wrappers from the floor and looking for food on the floor, he told this kid, and again, and this took place again many, many years after the Holocaust, this incident, he's in his 50s now, recalling what happened when he was a 16-year-old survivor in the death camp, so this happened many years later. But as he's telling the story, he also tells him, there were times when it was freezing, it was so brutally cold, and the cold, they didn't even notice the cold. All they thought about was food, even in the brutal cold, just food. All they could think about was just eating. They wanted to eat something. So this 16-year-old kid, the war is over. The Germans and all the other Nazi mass murderers flee the camps. He runs into the kitchen. And he runs through the garbage pail. And he finds two rotten potatoes. Two whole potatoes, but they're rotten. They're spoiled. And he sits there and eats those two whole potatoes. And he spent hours eating those two whole potatoes. even though they were rotten and they smelled and they were discolored and it was obvious they were spoiled, he spent hours enjoying those two whole potatoes. And then he passed out, and they took him to the hospital. Eventually he woke up in a hospital. He got food poisoning from it. But he survived. He managed to survive somehow. But he said that he never enjoyed food so much as when he was eating those two rotten potatoes. Because no matter how horrible your circumstances or conditions are, when you're filling yourself, when you're starving desperately and you're filling yourself up, while you're doing that, you're enjoying the process of filling yourself up. This is how the human body and the human psyche works. It's, of course, very sad and terrible and a horrible story, but that's how it works when people are in that terrible situation. And eventually, he got a job. He goes back. He got a job in the town where he was born. And he works there for a while, and then he wants to order everything in the restaurant. He saves up his money. They pay him in the job. Again, he's a 16-year-old kid. Saves up his money and runs to the restaurant and says, and wants to order everything in the restaurant with all the food, with all the money that he had. He says he's going to get revenge on the Germans. How? He's never going to starve again. He's going to eat everything in the restaurant. So they give him everything in the restaurant. They put it all in front of him. And he eats it. And he said that he plunged into the food and ate it frantically, eating every last drop of the food. And ate it and ate it and ate it. And then he went back to his room and cried because he realized that he couldn't enjoy the food anymore. He could never enjoy anything anymore as much as he enjoyed those two rotten potatoes when he was in a state of complete starvation. And so the Germans had taken away from him his ability to enjoy food. They had taken away from him his ability to taste. And they had created a situation where he was an out-of-control person, constantly trying just to constantly eat as much as possible. That was the situation, and that was the situation that led him eventually, even many years later when he was middle-aged, when he was in his 50s and had a family in Israel and a job and a home. Still, he had never gotten over what he went through as a teenager, what he saw as a teenager, and the experience that he went through as a teenager. And he said when he was eating the two rotten potatoes, he remembered his mother and his mother's cooking and his grandmother's cooking and his aunt's cooking, and he was remembering them and nostalgically remembering them. And he knew that they had been murdered. He knew that they were burned and gassed. And so he would nostalgically remember them. But nothing could restore, and of course nothing could restore all the loss that he suffered. So that is just one out of the millions of stories of what millions of European Jews went through during the Holocaust, the sadism, the cruelty, the savagery of a nation, Germany, which was supposedly the most cultured, the most educated nation in Europe. And this very well-educated, cultured, sophisticated nation, of course, a lot of their culture, sophistication, education came from the German Jews. And the Jews in every country were brought enlightenment and education and sophistication and culture with them. Because the Germans in Roman times were barbarians. And they were literally cavemen. They were barbarians and cavemen. But by the time when Hitler and the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, took over, the Germans already were already a very well-educated, highly sophisticated, technologically advanced nation, a nation that supposedly was enlightened and had been through the Enlightenment and had given the Jews, by the way, all the human rights and civil rights that you can imagine. And the Jews rose to the top in Germany. The Jews were allowed to rise to the top. You had a Jewish foreign minister. You had Jews in all key positions, in many key positions, in finance, in entertainment, in industry, just like you have in the United States. And when there was a real crisis and the chips were down, the Germans turned on their Jews. They always hated them. They always envied them. They always hated them. but they really decided to turn on them with a vengeance during the Holocaust. And this is just one story of the many of the sadistic, vicious, monstrous crimes that were committed against the Jewish people. Crimes that will never be forgiven. And that those who committed them will be punished for eternity for the terrible savagery that they committed against God's people, because the Jews are God's people. I don't say it, God says it in the Bible. God himself says that he chose the Jews out of all nations, out of all families of the earth, that he chose them and that he gave them an eternal covenant. God himself says so. And so, what we must take away from stories like this that we learn, and I could tell you so many things about Holocaust survivors that I met. There's so many different experiences that I could share with you from what they told me. What we have to learn from this is how horrifying it is. Not that the goyim, that the Gentile world, did nothing while this happened. That's to be expected. What was really horrifying is that American Jews, who were so powerful, who controlled Hollywood, had huge power in the news media and in the entertainment industry, had massive power, in the Roosevelt administration. They did nothing to save the 6 million. The 6 million could have been saved. They didn't have to be a Holocaust. The U.S. could have bombed the rail lines, bombed the concentration camps, stopped the Nazi murder machinery dead in its tracks. The Germans tested every step of the way how far they could go during the Holocaust. They tested what the world response would be if the Kristallnacht and every other atrocity and pogrom and thing that they did, all of it was a test. And when they saw that the world didn't care, and in fact the world wanted them to murder millions of Jews, when they saw that, and when they saw that the largest Jewish-owned newspaper in the world, the New York Nazi Times, was defending Hitler, was saying Germany's not really a dictatorship because there are still several parties in the Reichstag. It's not like Mussolini, who's a dictator in Italy, that Hitler restored they called him Herr Hitler in the New York Nazi Times. They gave him honorary titles. They defended him. They were writing very positively about him. In fact, in 1934, the New York Nazi Times got an award for impartial reporting from Nazi Germany. They were impartial. They were objective and nice to the Nazi Germans and got an award for it. This was a Jewish-owned newspaper, the Sulzbergers, Yimach Shmam B'Zichram Shem Reshem Yirkav, who were worse than the Nazis. These, because a Jew who does this to his people is worse than any Gentile Nazi. And the Jews voted for Roosevelt. 90% of the Jews voted for Roosevelt. 85-90%. He ran 4 times. They voted for him over and over again. And even after what he was doing in the Holocaust, 1944, they voted to re-elect him. And there were no protests. All the Jews that fought so hard for black civil rights and for every left-wing cause under the sun. When 6 million Jews were being murdered, they were nowhere to be found. They did nothing. Nothing. All the humanitarians and all of the so-called civilized, cultured, wonderful Jews who said, we can't be silent. We can't be silent. We have to fight to take people's guns away. We have to fight for all of these left-wing causes. 6 million Jews, though. 12,000 Jews being gassed every single day just in Auschwitz. When that was happening, that didn't bother them. That didn't move them at all. And in fact, when they were offered a chance to do something by Ben Hecht, the playwright who was organized, who did organize, he was the one guy who had an organization that was doing something, the vast majority of Jews that he approached rejected his offer to become active with them and become involved with them. They didn't want to know from it. So just bear that in mind. Okay? American Jews betrayed the 6 million during the Holocaust. That is also something that can never be forgotten or forgiven. And American Jews are betraying Israel now, always have betrayed Israel, and are continuing to betray Israel to this day. Remember, 78% of them voted for Barack Hussein Obama, who obviously was anti-Israel. I mean, obviously was a Muslim Jew hater, and they voted for him. 78% voted for him, knowing that he was hostile to Israel, because they didn't give a damn about Israel. (Clears throat) when we were fighting to save Soviet Jews, we often spoke about the Holocaust and how American Jews were silent. We in the Jewish Defense League, we were the one organization that really put our lives on the line. I went to prison for 5.5 years and then spent 12 years on probation, parole, house arrest, all types of punishments, in addition to 5.5 years in prison under terrible conditions. And now I've been banned from going to Israel for over 20 years because of what I did. When we in the JDL, because of our great leader, Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Libracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, led a campaign to free Soviet Jews, and because of us, the issue of Soviet Jewry became a huge issue, and they couldn't ignore it, and the Soviet Jews were freed because of what JDL did. Make no mistake about that. When we did that, we saw the same type of criminal behavior. But wouldn't it have been wonderful if there had been a JDL doing what we did for Soviet Jews during the Holocaust, to make sure nobody could ignore what was happening to the millions of Jews being burned and gassed in Europe? They could condemn, they could scream and yell and say whatever they want, just like they did when we were fighting for Soviet Jewry, when we bombed Soviet diplomatic complexes. When we did those things, it made huge news all over the place. If things like that had been done during the Holocaust, I can assure you, it would have shaken things up if there had been a JDL around to lead the protests and to make sure that the issue makes page one. I can assure you that something would have happened in the Holocaust. They wouldn't have been able to ignore the issue anymore. I remember when I was in federal maximum security penitentiaries and many times placed in solitary confinement because I complained about the fact that they weren't giving me kosher food. I remember what it was like to starve. I remember what it was like to go days without food. They starved me. They tried to starve me to death. In fact, I had to be taken to outside hospitals because there were complaints from people outside, started complaining to senators and congressmen about what was happening to me, so they didn't want me to actually die in prison, so they actually took me five times. They took me to outside hospitals for treatment because my health was in jeopardy because of the fact that they weren't feeding me. And all of that just gave me a little taste, just a little taste of what our brothers and sisters went through, millions of our brothers and sisters went through during the terrible Holocaust. It is a horrible thing when you're starving all day, all night, never have anything to eat, and you get weaker, and your body just craves food. It's a terrible thing. It's a terrible form of torture. Anyway, we're determined in JTF not to be silent, just as JDL was not silent to Soviet Jewry. Now, JTF is a law-abiding organization. JDL was not. JDL broke the law to free Soviet Jews. JDL was willing to break the law and pay the price in order to save our brothers and sisters. JTF, we don't do that because it wouldn't help. With the cause of Israel, it's a completely different issue, completely different period of time, completely different time period. Now it would backfire if we did things like that with JTF. So JTF is a completely law-abiding organization. We just want to alert the Jews of Israel to what's really going on over there. And it's our responsibility to do that. It's our responsibility never to be silent again. I just want to say, you know, that Bibi Netanyahu, the so-called Prime Minister of Israel, and the whole Israeli establishment, Naftali Bennett, Avigdor Lieberman, all the parties in Israel, the Jewish Home Party, and the Likud, and all the other parties in Israel, how have they responded to the Hamas Muslim terrorists firing missiles into Israel, into Israeli cities, and then terrorizing the people of Israel? They've responded now by developing a new technology. Missiles that shoot down missiles. And they've really made a lot of progress in finding a way to have missiles that shoot down missiles. Why are they spending billions of dollars to develop missiles that shoot down missiles? Because they don't want to hurt the Muslim terrorists. If they really bombed and destroyed the source of these missiles, if they really hit back and gave the Arabs what they deserve, which is ferocious retaliation, if we were in power, that would happen. But if they really did that, Arabs would be hundreds of Arab civilians would be killed. The Arab civilians all support the terrorists. They all hate the Jews. They want to destroy. They voted to put Hamas in power in Gaza. They all want to destroy Israel. They despise Israel, almost all of them. But the Jews are trying to figure out ways to kill the missiles instead of killing the terrorists, because we don't want to hurt any Arab. We don't want to hurt the people. It's the Arab terrorists aren't our enemies. Is the Islamic Nazis that preach genocide, they're not our enemies. The missiles are our enemies. Just like the sick, self-hating beasts in this country who say guns are the end. Guns are the problem. We have to outlaw people's guns. Guns are not a problem. The problem is the people that fire the guns at you. The criminals who are being let off the hook by the same leftists who say that we should grab everybody's guns and confiscate everybody's guns. Eventually, you're going to have Jewish scientists in Israel try to figure out a way to stop the bullets of Muslim terrorists who are firing with bullets, also fire with bullets into Israel, to have bullets that hit bullets and stop the bullets from going through the air. Because they don't want to actually kill the terrorists that are firing. We can't do that. And the Jews, so many of the Jews in Israel are so thrilled that we have this new technology. I mean, how crazy this is. How insane this is. You can never win when you're on the defense like this. You can never win when you say, we don't have a just cause. We concede everything to our enemies. And by the way, the cause of Israel is the most just cause in the world. The Muslim terrorists and the Muslim Nazi countries that want to destroy Israel have the worst case that you could possibly have. I mean, there is no moral justification at all on the Arab side of the issue. None. The Jews are 100% right, 1,000% right in every respect. But they want to concede everything to their enemies and say, no, okay, we'll be nice, we'll admit that you're right, even though they know that's not true. We'll admit that you're right, please, let's have 5 minutes of quiet. Until we have a prime minister in Israel, a Jewish prime minister, who believes in Jewish values and who goes after the enemies of the Jewish people, and who doesn't worry that our weapons are going to hurt Arabs, but who wants the Arab enemy, the more the better of the Arab enemy should be killed by our weapons, who uses Israeli brain power and Israeli genius, because Israeli technology is ingenious, and the Jews do have tremendous brain power, but they're just nuts. They're geniuses, but they're nuts. If we turn these Jewish geniuses into sane people who use Israeli technology for sane purposes, Israel could be a paradise, and Israel's enemies would be defeated very quickly. Very quickly we'd get rid of the problem. That's why we support Moshe Feiglin and the Zehut Party. It's going to be hard getting him elected right now because, you know, he's running against parties that have tens of millions of dollars, parties with complete support from the news media, from the biased news media. And they have all the levers of power and all the levers of the big institutions in Israel. And he's just running as a citizen, you know, with other citizens and just trying to run a simple campaign to explain to people, no, wait a minute, this is crazy. What are we doing here? This is crazy. We got to do everything we can to help him, even though it's an uphill fight and the odds are against him right now. But we're going to try. We're going to do everything we can to help him because he's telling the truth. And so we're going to try to get him elected to the Knesset. It is essential that the truth be exposed. I will say that one of the bright spots, I'll continue to say it, one of the bright spots, as you know, is our advertising campaign. We have an advertising campaign. And tens of thousands of Israeli Jews are exposed to our videos every single week, every single month, every month. We have thousands every week, but tens of thousands every month. And that's one of the bright spots. Yes, it's small compared to the millions who are exposed every night to lies in the news, on television, radio, internet, and all. All the Israeli Jews are exposed to that day and night. And so seeing one of our videos once, tens of thousands seeing a video of ours once a month, or twice a month. You know, some of them may see more than one video. That's small compared to the battle we're fighting against, because we're reaching tens of thousands, they're reaching millions. We reach them once a month, once a week, depends on how often they come and see our material. Whereas our enemies, the self-hating traitor leaders, reach them day and night, 24 hours a day with propaganda. So of course we have a tough fight against us. The only thing we have on our side is the truth. They have the money, they have the power, they have the influence, they have everything on their side. We have nothing except the truth, except honesty and the truth and common sense and logic and the truth of the Torah. Because God gave us all the tools to build a Gan Eden, to build a paradise, a Garden of Eden in the land of Israel. He gave us all the tools and all the ability to do so, if only we had the right leaders. So we're going to do what we can to get Moshe Feiglin elected. He needs to get 3.25% of the vote. That's the minimum for him to get 4 seats in the Knesset. The minimum is 4 seats. That's the threshold, the minimum threshold. Out of 120, there are 120 seats in the Knesset. You need 4 as a minimum, which is 3.25% of the vote, in order to get in. That's hard to do for a brand new party without big sources of funding, without any institutional support, just ordinary citizens trying to put something together. Very hard to do. It's not easy to get 3.25% of people to turn against the big parties like the Likud and these other parties that they've been told, you must vote for them or the left will get in, as if Netanyahu is not also the left. But we got to try to do it. We got to try to do it, and God willing, I hope we can pull it off. I hope we can pull off a surprise. In the meantime, at least we are reaching the Jews of Israel, tens of thousands of them, with our videos, tens of thousands a month. It is something. It is something. And I know that it has an effect on many of the Jews who see our videos. At least it exposes them to the truth. We want to reach many more. You can help us do that. The more you help JTF, the more Jews hear this message of truth. The more people we can reach. The more you help us financially, if you send money to our post office box, or if you help us online with our PayPal account, and you can see on our site how to do all that. The more you help us, the more people we can reach. And of course, we also want to publicize our English language movement as much as possible, although the vast majority of our emphasis is on the Hebrew movement, but we want to publicize the English language movement as well. We, in the JDL, when we were in the JDL, we proved in the Soviet Jewry movement that you can change things, and you can turn the tide, and you can create a different historical outcome if you're determined to do what's right. In JTF, we want to do the same thing. This time, we're doing it a different way. This time, we do it in a law-abiding way, because that's the only method that would work with the issue of Israel and with the times that we're in and the period of time that we're in. We need your help. Let's fight together as a team. Let's do what is morally right and what God commands us to do, that we have to fight to save Israel. We have to fight to save the Jewish people. We have to fight to wake people up. If you want to be on the side of what is morally right and what is true and just and righteous, then you're in the right place. We're not going to give you big plaques at a dinner honoring you the way they do at the UJA and all these other organizations from the establishment who let 6 million Jews die and did everything they could to prevent any effort to save them. But your reward will come in different ways. Your real reward will come knowing that you're doing something to make this a better world, that you're doing something to bring truth into the world for a change. That's the real reward. Again, if we fight together as a team, we still can make this a better world. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.